amendment in Q1. Yes, Ms. Day?
Chair, I propose that we adopt the minutes.
There's a mover, seconded, Ms. Kaba and Gosia. Thank you very much. Can we move on then to the second item? Who goes first? Are we meeting with the... Yes, Ms. Lee?
Yes, just before we start, Chairperson, we've only received this document this morning. I don't know whether other people received it before the time. Last night, I only received mine this morning. Now, you know, we need to prepare for this meeting. And the strategic plan is a very important plan, and in line with the new requirements, Chairperson, with the new money bill that's before Parliament. It's not business as usual where we just listen to your report. We now have got the right afterwards. We have to pass a resolution to say that we support it and why we support it. But we also have got the right to make changes now. And Chairperson, when you hear things now this morning, you didn't prepare for it. I hope that we need to improve on this, that we get the documents at least a day or two before the time. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Lila, I like you very much. China, you know that too. The strategic plan was given to us more than a week ago. The standard practice is a week. We were given more than a week ago. I'm talking about the bound one, the published one, this one. Everybody's got that one. This one here is merely a presentation of that one. It's not something different. No, no, no. So if you have read that one, you find it easy to see this one because it's in relation to that one. No problem, Mr. Lee. Yes. We also have the Ngonyama Trust circulated as well, the strategic plan. So there is no shortage of information. Thank you very much. Who goes first, Ngonyama Trust or DG? DG, go first. You are the top dog.
Thank you very much. I'm coming with the Chief Land Claims Commissioner, Mr. Mpela, and our head for rural infrastructure development, Leona Archrick, and DDG Mdu Shabane, who is responsible for land reform. And we've got our new chartered accountant, the CFO, Mr. Pili. He joined us on the 1st of this month. And we've got the new that is our CFO. Yes, and then we've got Mr. Spu Gamede. He is our new Deputy Chief Land Claims Commissioner. He joined us also on the 1st of this month. And Judge Ngwenya will be presenting for Ngonyama Transport. He's the chair of Ngonyama Transport. And I'm coming with Chief Financial Officer who has been handling our books, Musi Mashangu, Mr. Anton van Staden, who is head of our support service, the corporate service. I think I've covered everyone. Chair, on the presentation, as you correctly said, we are talking to this document that we have circulated. You will recall that there were these five priorities that the ruling party talked about: education, health, job creation, fighting off crime, and rural development was one of those five key priorities. And out of that, government developed outcomes to say what would be the outcomes to drive the main program of government in the 5 year period. And the cabinet of January agreed and endorsed the 12 outcomes. Number 7 of those outcomes is vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities and food security. And those outcomes, the president will want to know the effectiveness and impact of this department when the department achieves these outputs, and this is what this strategic plan is presenting today. Those four outputs are sustainable land reform, and then food security for all, rural development and sustainable livelihoods, job creation linked to skills training. And the three supportive outputs would be the provision of efficient and effective cadastral surveys and special development frameworks. The provision of efficient deeds registration that underpins security of tenure, of land tenure, and to secure efficient and effective functionality of the department to support the core vision and function. That is what this strategic plan is covering. So the purpose is to outline what our new vision is and what we are planning to do over this this planning period. And as I indicated, it was the January cabinet reporter that that endorsed this outcome that we are focusing on, as well as in the State of the Nation address, the president confirmed that we should be rolling out the CRPP 260 watts in the period to 2014, and that we need to work closely with other agricultural support programs in order to ensure that we achieve the vision and mission, and that our success will be measured by ensuring that there is an increase in the number of small-scale farmers who are operating effectively in the economy in the country. So those are the things that will be considered in measuring our effectiveness as a department. And in the budget speech, the Minister of Finance focused on the need to reduce joblessness, to support labor-intensive programs, and the recapitalization of state enterprises, including land bank, for the support of these rural development programs and small farmers, and the need to sustain high levels of public-private investment in infrastructure. That is what the Minister of Finance highlighted. This is the strategic planning framework which captures the vision, the mission, and the strategy that we are going to be adopting in implementing this program. We have tried to give effect to the direction that is coming from the presidency, which says that government performance is going to be monitored and evaluated, and the minister leading this department will have to report to the president on these outputs, what progress has been made, and we have developed this framework which will guide that reporting framework for the president, for the minister reporting to the presidency. And we have structured the issue of the working of the stakeholders in this relationship, that the stakeholders would form a very important basis for the functioning of this program that we are having. Those stakeholders include the other government departments, the municipalities, the private sector. In fact, we spent last 2 weeks, in fact, speaking to the Agri-SA, to the Farmers Union, as well as the commodity groups, and we have planned meetings for next week, Monday, that we are going to speak to them to say what is it that they are going to contribute in this plan that we are talking about. We have talked to them about the recapitalization and development program. We would like to get a clear indication what will be their contribution in doing that. So our stakeholders include state organs of the state, national, provincial, and local, as well as the private partnerships, including non-governmental organizations. I'll speak to that later today. What we understand by vibrant and sustainable communities is communities that can produce their own food, that can participate in economic growth meaningfully, and that can be trained and accept new knowledge, which will improve their performance in the manner in which they do business, and that is the healthy rural communities, both in terms of health, but the vibrancy of that community in terms of interacting with one another to improve their environment, the local economic development, so to speak. So we're talking about political maturity, not as in party politics, but people that can actually talk to leadership in those in their own communities to lead development, to participate in development and direct development in their own area. And then the issue of social stability, the strengthening of homes, that even if there are pressures that are affecting the structure of the families, that families still can survive and support one another going forward. We talk about self-reliance and social cohesion. We believe that rural development can never succeed if you do not adopt a participatory approach where people decide and get involved and take a lead role in defining and doing their own development. So that is what we believe. That's why our strategies include social mobilization of rural communities to take initiatives, strategic investment in economic and social infrastructure, increased economic activity in rural areas, sustainable land and agrarian reform. And we did talk about a need to review our program, not only in terms of the policies, but also in terms of legislation. We need to look, when we talk about agrarian reform, we are talking about the manner in which people use land, the manner in which the community get organized to make sure that the natural resources they have, such as land and water and spaces that they have in their areas, are used with future generations in mind, so that they cannot waste those natural resources. The livestock and cropping are central in that agrarian transformation. And we are saying all of that must add to the increased vibrancy in the local economic development in those areas. To give effect to this, we are saying that we may have to look at all productive land as national assets, so that when you use land, you don't use it anyhow. If you are not using the land properly, you are affecting the ability of future generations to have access to that land, to that water, to those forests, to those resources that the rural people have. So the optimal use of those is important. That's why we think perhaps we need a review of the whole tenure system. We are saying through our green paper process, we will look at what kind of tenure systems are there since the days of Van Riebeeck. What has worked, what is not working, how can we amend some of the policies and legislation to give effect to what we would like to see on the ground. We review the current tenure policies and legislation and look at the freehold system, look at giving effect. We did present to you as committee the proposal that we must categorize the land reform beneficiaries, so that you cannot, what we have learned is that in the past period from 1994 to now, we have given land to groups, and those groups are not really effective. We have looked at buying farms where there was one farmer, we put 100 households, and now they sometimes start fighting over the land and not using the land. So the question is, what is the best method to hold land? Because now, if they are going to start fighting, you had one farmer there on that farm, you put 100 households. So this is the challenge with many of the land reform transfers. That's why it is characterized by disputes. It is characterized by CPAs that will be having quite a lot of challenges. So I think those may call for a review of the system so that we can say what works. In the planned categorization, which we have tried to explain in the fragment, we are saying that we would need to look at the land holding. Some people may require 1 hectare of land. Some people may require residential land, like in some of the rural areas, they have got about a quarter of a hectare, 50 by 50 plots, 50 meters by 50 meter plots. In the urban areas, it will vary from 300 square meters to 1,000 square meters. We think we need perhaps a dialogue that says what should be the land holdings of people generally, so that you don't lump these people in this highly productive asset as this big group that may not have even the initiative to work on the land. So if what we are proposing there is that categorization will actually help. Those who are demonstrating that they can actually make use of the land, like the current people who are in these homeland areas who may have 100 cattle, 1,000 sheep, in those circumstances, clearly those people, if you are going to put them in a particular category, they may not be as productive. But if you put them in another category, they may find productivity in that area. Our land policies and legislation was one cap fits all, and I think that's one of the things that we realized in the implementation of this. So we are saying that perhaps this is what we need to do. We are also talking about the establishment of a state land management board, which would look at lease management, looking at the access to land, not only by nationals but also by foreign nationals. How do you access land in South Africa, especially on farmland? So that is one of the things that we need to look at. And one of the describing qualities of this strategic plan is the job creation. And we're saying in that job creation, we would like to ensure that wherever we are on these CRDP sites in these 160 wards that we are planning in this period of 2011, we would make sure that we do have households that have jobs in those areas. We did indicate to you that we would like to use the standard public works, but the manner in which we do it is that we would like to offer a 2-year contract, and to this end, we have appointed the IDT as the implementing agent for the employment of those people. They are used to the EPW program, and we are saying that the EPW P2 program, which says offer better jobs than these 1-day jobs or 3-day jobs or 1-month jobs or 3-month jobs. Ours is a 2-year contract. We're saying that over that 2-year period, people will have a stable job, and we are saying they must actually create jobs themselves. We are not an employment agent. We do not employ people, so we may not have jobs that we are going to create ourselves, but we will create the opportunity that people can employ themselves. This is the emphasis that we are making, that it is when they get into the businesses that they own that they can employ themselves in those jobs, not to be employed somewhere else. We want them to be job creators. So if you are empowering people, you must empower them such that they are creators of wealth than consumers of wealth. Our current system appointing to us creating a lot of consumers instead of creating those who create employment themselves. So through this project, and various programs of self-employment and development, we believe that people will create jobs themselves, not expect to be employed by a agent or an employer, but that they themselves create jobs in the environment. These two cooperatives and other business initiatives in those communities, such as in this CRPP site that we are working on in 20 wards, we do have cooperatives that have been registered. We do have women that are working on gardens. We do have people that are working on brick yards and paving streets. People that have been working in the housing construction, like we reported to you, that about 231 houses have been built in Muyasha. So there are people who are working in those kind of structures. Those are the kind of jobs we are talking about. I will not go through this. We have taken you through this. But what we are saying in all of this is that it is the jobs that are created by the people themselves that we are talking about, not an employment agent or a factory that is creating jobs there. But it is the people through their programs that these jobs are going to be created. What we have done is, in this strategic plan, we have looked at those strategic outputs, and this whole strategic plan, at the back, we have even outlined exactly what is it that we are going to do for each of these outputs. We have had to reorganize the department as opposed to the old Department of Land Affairs that we had. We now have a minister who is resident in the department, and the deputy minister and the ministry, but in the department we've got the DG, internal audit, and the cluster coordination, the executive administration. The key programs, which are delivery programs, include the branch of restitution. The commission will continue as we have been having it in terms of their legislation, the land reform branch, and then we've got this geospatial technology development and disaster management unit that is going to be responsible for the whole development or spatial development framework and the surveys and mapping and the issues of technology development interacting with CSIR as to what are the appropriate technologies that would be relevant in implementing rural development. And as such, we are interacting through that branch with CSIR as well as Human Sciences Research Council to look at those appropriate technologies. One of those, as an example, is the solar energy, which we would like each of the homes, on each of the sites that would have 100 homes that are using solar energy in this period up to 2014. So they are looking at those appropriate technologies, using it, wind farming as an example. This is very common in Europe. But what we're saying is that in areas where we've got a potential for wind farming, this is what they could use. For energy. We're looking at various methods, like the methods of making roads, durable roads, which are cost effective. So those are the technologies that we're working with CSIR on. Even on various livelihoods, for example, in the permaculture, we have worked with some of the universities and non-governmental organizations which are involved in permaculture and use of appropriate technologies in agricultural production. Some of the projects in the South Coast and the Bopo have already started looking at those possibilities, with even for possibilities of for export for these types of products. So that component is focusing on that on that technology as well as disaster management. Then the other branch is that of rural infrastructure and development. This branch focuses, for example, on these houses that were built in these wards, the 20 wards where we're operating. They will look at the roads, the types of roads that we can talk about, especially access roads within those villages where we're working. They will be looking at the infrastructure, such as the dipping tanks and the fencing of agricultural assets and related technologies. Working with Department of Agriculture, for example, around the irrigation systems. So that component is going to deal with that. And then the deed registration, nothing new there. But what we are looking at in deed registration is to make sure that we are on top of this function that does top quality registration and security of Kenya in the title deed, as well as in defining the precise land parcels in the rest of South Africa, including the new. The new developments, the new areas that are being developed. This includes all types of titles, sectional titles, freehold titles, and even the long-term leases are registered and kept in the deeds of the land. And the cadastral surveys will actually look at the development of the actual property description which gets registered in the deeds office. We are thinking of working closely with these two components, the deed registration and the cadastral survey, towards the digitization of the registration of deeds. At the moment, they are done manually, which is quite a challenge. So we have started a project where we are considering the digital registration of title deeds. We've got countries that are already doing this. So we have asked them to come, they did visit us, to show us what can be done. We have learned this in South Africa through SARS, that SARS who improved on their system of debt collection. Once they started improving on their electronic systems, they improved the rate of collection of revenue. And we are believing that with the volume of work, if you think how many title deeds are there, both in the urban areas and in the rural areas, this is a big volume of work. We are talking billions here. So if we are going to improve that, our effectiveness in that area, it would improve quite a lot. So this is what we are talking about in this. And we hope that by the end of this year, we would be somewhere. Okay. Finding how we can move, migrate systems to electronic systems in the country. And then the branch support services will talk to all of your support areas like HR, communications, human resource development, security services, that is the support systems, and then we have set the office of the CFO as a branch, as it is standard practice with many other departments. The point of this slide is that we have reorganized the department in terms of the new mandate, and that is how we are organized. This structure has been approved by the DPSA and the National Treasury, and we are working on further details in the lower levels of this budget. On land reform, we are still retaining the redistribution program, but we are saying we must do things very differently. Like I indicated, the categorization of the land reform beneficiaries, but also key to this is this area of capitalization and development. To say we can't have just the land acquisition, which is what we have been having all of these years, without the relevant support. I think in the workshop yesterday, you did get the analysis, which was saying that focus on land acquisition only has been one of the challenges in the implementation of this program, when the other Department of Agriculture has to come and provide that support, which is extension services and to assist people on farms, to farm effectively and efficiently. It has not been part of this department. Now, because of this lack in our system, we have decided and Treasury has approved, particularly with the new mandate of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, that we can take 25% of our budget and use that for recapitalization and development. So there will be no new approval of land acquisition without this provision for the 25% and recapitalization. Any land acquisition from now on must address the question of what will you do with this land? How are you going to do production? And we're saying to facilitate that, any land acquisition must be accompanied by a 25% allow a grant or support system that will lead to sustainable use of that land. This has never been there before, and now that this has, the mandate of the department has been broadened, this is what we're saying we must do in new land acquisition. That is what is in this strategic plan. Secondly, we are saying that any land acquisition or land transfers must be directly linked to the CRDP. CRDP means that we are approaching, we are adopting an integrated approach to development, to land reform and to rural development. So which means that it is not only us as the department, just to reiterate, our role is that of the initiator, facilitator, coordinator and catalyst. Those are the four descriptive terms for this department. So which means that we must request other departments to come and have an input in the implementation of any of our programs. So that is what the CRDP principles mean in this presentation. And then secondly, the strategic partnerships. We are saying in the strategic partnership, we have emphasized with the farmers the principles of co-management to develop the management capacity of the people. It's not just to train them to be good laborers on the farm. Now that they are owners of the land, we would like to make sure that they have management expertise, and we're saying co-management may be the right way to go, and the share equity and mentorships, so that we can improve sustainability. We have said that people who have got expertise, who have done farming, not just who are just aspirant farmers, who have done farming and who knows the ins and outs, the ups and downs, must actually be supporting our program. So this would be sitting in signed agreements between these two parties, the new landowners as well as those who were landowners before, where there is a signed agreement which says whose role is going to be what over what period. We would like long-term arrangements, not that short-term arrangements. The limitations of the current system is that most of the current landowners were linking their participation in our land reform program to the availability of grants. Once the grants are over, they leave. So I think that will not be the case in this new arrangement. We would like to make sure that there is long-term sustainability, and as we described to you, those co-management principles, that mentorship and share equity, means that there will be their own contribution. Their management fees, if any, must be linked to production, not to the grant. And then we have talked to the categorization of land and tenure reform. We are saying we need to review the tenure legislation and policy to protect farm dwellers and to deal with the issues of farm dwellers and the land rights management. We've got a new bill that we are proposing, which will deal with this matter. Like we had said, that we would like to review the EFTA legislation and the MPA legislation. We would like to submit this bill to cabinet by the end of this month, and we think that it should be brought to the committee by this month. and then it will be referred to Parliament in the normal way, course of events, which would mean that by July we would like this matter to be before Parliament. So we do have a bill, and we would like to discuss that bill with you sometime in April. On the restitution, same argument here, that whichever claim that we settle, we must settle through the CRPP principle. Even though this is a rights-based program, we are seeing that whenever we settle a claim, we must try and find where are the CRPP principles in the settlement of that claim. And we have used Desert Stop, a land claim in Desert Stop, as an example, and a land claim in Rimpas Mark as an example, where we are settling a claim. We would like to locate the CRPC principle in the settlement of any outstanding land claim. This would mean that there are other interested parties who must actually participate in the post-settlement support to those restitution beneficiaries. And again, even with this restitution, we have allocated an amount of 275 million for this recapitalization and development linked to the restitution program. On the geospatial services, we have just captured there that we would like to store the aerial image of the country. When you get all of these maps, whether it's for Cape Town or Johannesburg or the rural areas, those maps, we have to update them on a regular basis. Update them with the new streets, if there are new streets or new routes. So we've got to update that. If you are fortunate to use your GPS, to update that GPS, they use this the information that comes from this this process. We have to fly the country every year so that we can update all the maps in this country. So this is the service that we do. We have produced the Braille Atlas for those people with disabilities that they can read the Atlas, the map for their provinces through Braille. We have done that for some of the provinces. We would like to cover all the provinces with the Braille Atlas. And the spatial planning component, as I indicated, is going to be very busy. With all of the CRPP reports, we do have this spatial information report that we have for every site that we are working on. This unit is helping us to deal with that, and actually to work with a number of municipalities. As we discussed, the Land Use Management Bill and other special related programs. This is the component that is assisting us, and they've got quite a lot of work to do in this period, especially linked to the CRPP. TRIF, as we call it, Social, Technical, Rural Livelihoods and Institutional Facilitation, is responsible for that social mobilization that I said is our strategy. Establish cooperatives, establish groups, and to facilitate work in this area. In the report that I gave to you a few weeks ago, I did indicate province by province where we are implementing this CRPP with the various projects on this site. This is the team that facilitates that. And as we roll out to the 161, this is the team that will do that that work. And rural infrastructure, I did speak to it, and as I indicated, we are working with the infrastructure cluster to look at all of these developments, like I outlined to you earlier. With the supportive objectives, I'm not going to spend time because I did speak to this, what we are doing, even for this catastrophe survey, I did talk to that. On the support services, we are talking to the capacity of the department. We have looked at the new structure that I presented to you just now and to say what is it that we will need in ensuring that we've got the required capacity. We're not just talking about numbers here. We have talked about the skills development, the competencies. We've got a training program for all our staff to be able to link their expertise to this approach to rural development. To this end, we have interacted with the University of Pretoria, the University of Fort Hare, as well as the University of Limpopo, on how to implement these very specific programs that will ensure that we develop capacity within the department. But other than this, which is interacting with the universities, especially the rural universities, they've got a network of rural universities. We have had, I think I did report to you that we had about four weeks ago, a meeting with the FET colleges, the Universities of Technology, and the agricultural colleges, where we said we would like to develop farmers. So the training that we're talking about here is for internal, which is the capacity of staff in the department, but also for the land, our rural development beneficiaries, that their capacity, such as the FET colleges, on their livelihood, such as knitting and sewing, candle making, such as the proper farming skills. We even said to the principals of these colleges, we do not want to produce academics with diplomas and degrees, but we would like to produce farmers, practicing farmers, and that's the challenge that we have with them. And we are entertaining proposals at the moment from all of them. There were about 120 who came to our workshop, and we are entertaining their proposals now as to how best they are going to do that. This is the program that we are going to implement right away. And then in terms of policy, we are having the green paper and agrarian transformation. We are just doing the catch-ups of this, and we hope to present it to Cabinet still here in March. And we hope that after Cabinet has looked at it, we should be able to have it open for discussion by April, but definitely we'll have some workshops, public workshops in May, so that we can sharpen this. So in May we're hoping that this agrarian paper, green paper will be out for consultation and discussion. And the land tenure systems reform is going to look at what is it that we are going to review in our policy and legislation. Part of the green paper is going to address some of those issues. It may actually lead to a legislation. It could be a rural development bill or any legislation that can come out of that green paper process. The Rural Development Agency Bill, we hope that by 2012 we should be talking about that Rural Development Agency Bill, which will talk to the actual implementation and rollout of the CRPP going forward. I'm not going to spend time on this one, because it's already included in the strategic plan. If you are on pages 32 onwards in this strategic plan, that is all what is there. All we said is that sustainable land reform to us as the first output talks to the redistribution of land, and it talks to land acquisition and the use of the state infrastructure to actually implement that, and to restore the land rights to those people who were removed from the land, and secure rights on for people living on farms. So that. that is what that is talking about. On food security, we are not just talking about the availability of food, but we are talking about people producing their own food in this cabin. The recapitalization and development of farms, we are saying that we would like to make sure that all these farms where we are doing transfers, they are sustainable in terms of use. So we have set those targets for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then under food security, our second action is to develop community and institutional school gardens. We have targeted about 60% of rural schools to have gardens, school gardens, by the end of 2014. We're told that we're talking about 8,000 rural schools that are there. So I think 60% of those should have school gardens. And in this project, we're not on our own. We're with the Department of Agriculture. We're with the Department of Water Affairs, because we want not just the garden in a school, but also the water tank. So Water Affairs, we have agreed with them through that allocation of 1.2 billion that is in Water Affairs. We are going to get Georgia Tech and to do rainwater harvesting as one of the ways to deal with water challenges in our community. So we are in this with those other departments, as well as education. With education, the Minister of Education is actually excited about this project of basic education, and she believes that we must make sure that each school has got a garden, and the principal, the school governing board, as well as the children in schools, have an opportunity to go to a garden at least 30 minutes to 45 minutes a week. All of those classes must be able to do that. And we're saying that these are the targets that we have set for ourselves. So these four departments will be implementing this program jointly and reporting to the clusters on a regular basis, as well as to the president by the minister of this project. The establishment of AgriParks, we have started in Eastern Cape. We do have two AgriParks, one in Aidutra and one in Alice. We would invite you to some of these chairperson. It would be good for you just to see how this is done, how we are doing this. We are partnering with the University of Water and with the provincial department, producing vegetables and processing those into soup powder, and we are linking it to nutrition in schools. And we would like to roll that out to all. And we are saying we would like to establish about 39 agri-parks throughout the country. And in Limpopo, we have already started with tomato production, where they are producing soup powder from tomato with many of those. So with that initiative, we hope that the value-added approach that we talked about is something that is going to help. In Limpopo, these tomato producers are all over Limpopo, and they bring their produce to the processing plant, and they are very happy with the progress. They need support in some areas. That is what we are discussing with them, how to run out that type of program. Even there, if you would like to go, we would like to take it would be our pleasure to take you to them. With rural infrastructure, we are talking about the roads in particular. We are talking about finding solutions to infrastructure problems in these areas. We are talking about establishing e-centers where people can rural people can have ICT centers and have internet in those villages where they would have computer centers where they can have this. So we believe that is possible. The other output is rural development and sustainable livelihoods. And here we're talking about working with the cooperatives and the initiatives, and we have set target for those establishment mechanisms to ensure nature resource conservation and management. This is to be to ensure that the sustainable use of natural resources. And we are working with the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of that program. And then the, to ensure that we've got disaster management center, we are working with municipalities in terms of this to ensure that we are able to deal with rural disasters and then conduct research and technology. I spoke to this one earlier. And the job creation model is to say that we would like to have increased agricultural production with all our land transfers, as well as our other rural development programs. And those are the type of targets that we are setting for ourselves for this period. That this will be linked to training and capacity building. These are the allocations that we've got. You have seen this in the workshop yesterday. Basically, that is what we have. So we've got 6.7 billion this year, 7.9 next year, and 8.3 the following year with those allocations. I just thought I needed to clarify something. I think yesterday one of the observations was that we are given money and we have not been able to spend it. That was not for the total budget. The budget, as you know, we have been spending 99% of our budget, but still not achieving what we would like to achieve. And we think that even this year we would like to get there. But the amount that they were talking about was the 253 million rand that was allocated to rural development, and which was only given to us last year about October, and which actually reached us in November. So that amount where we had spent only 5% then was the amount that came in November last year, and December was dead. And today the expenditure on that item is 24%. But almost all of it is committed. One of the challenges was that rural development, we did not have budget lines, and this is the challenge that we're having with National Treasury. We have discussed it. We didn't have budget lines. With the other programs, we know which budget line goes to which one in the vote. But with rural development, I'll give you an example. When we built sanitation in schools in Limpopo, we built toilets. And we wanted to spend that money on toilets. We did not have a budget item, which was called toilets, in our, you know, the bureaucracy of government. So we had to speak to National Treasury to say, for rural development, being a new department, we must have relevant budget lines for this, and these are the items, infrastructure and input, because we may be able to buy tractors or seedlings or fences for fencing material. Now, we didn't have budget lines like that, so we have to clarify this with Treasury so that they can accept these budget lines for the new department. And this has caused a number of delays. Not that there are no projects to be funded, those projects are there. So we have established the way to deal with that problem, and that money has started to move. And we are convinced that this 253 million, which was given to us in November, is going to be spent by the end of March, because there is a lot of projects already in this regard. So I just wanted to clarify that on this one. We do have, speaking to this item, we have circulated this morning, but we did circulate this MTBPS policy, medium-term budget policy statement. When we were with you last time, we did circulate this. And what we are saying there is that we had asked for a certain amount from National Treasury, and we couldn't get that amount that we were asking for, and we were given a certain amount, which is this one that we've got there, which is, has been approved. And out of that, we have had to make do with what we can we are committed to that budget. But ours, I just wanted to clarify the second point, namely that when you see this small amount of 253 allocated to rural development, you must not think that that is the total spend of government in rural development, because some other money for rural development are sitting, for example, in water assets. The Minister of Finance announced 1.3 billion rand for these water programs that I spoke to earlier. But there is another amount for sanitation, which is another 1.2 billion, which is sitting in human settlements as a department. We have had meetings with those departments, those two departments, that 1.2 million for housing, for sanitation, will be used for rural sanitation, and we are agreeing on some of the projects that we will use. The other one is for this water tank. We've agreed with water how we can use that 1.2 billion that sits in their budget. And the Minister for Finance, last year, he announced that there was 6 billion available for rural development. And the explanation was that it was sitting in the budget of the municipalities, in the budget of the provincial department, as well as in the budget of the national department, where they are common programs. This is where we have challenges with Treasury, because they were saying we could not spend on other departments' mandates. For example, as the rural development, we can't spend on roads, because that belongs to transport. As rural development, we can't spend on schools, because it must be in the Department of Education. And we have agreed with Treasury that because of the transversal nature of this program, we must have the initiation fund that supports our role as an initiator. This is why in this vote under rural development, they have indicated that these funds will be used by the department as initiator, as facilitator, as coordinator, and as catalyst. So they have put that in the document, precisely because they accepted that our function may be a transversal function. Let me conclude here by saying that this program, this strategic plan, its success depends on us working together with other government departments, and that we need commitment and cooperation from other state departments and municipalities, as well as the relevant critical stakeholders, like I indicated, your private sector, your NGOs, your development finance institutions, as well as research institutions, as I outlined in the presentation. And we are saying we must be able to share available resources, reprioritize and optimize the use of available resources, human and financial. And we believe that if we are there together, we should be able to make it, to achieve the set goals and targets of the strategic plan. That is our strategy.
I just have four questions. The one under the establishment of a state land management board. to facilitate the management of state-owned agricultural land and leases. Is this going to include a state-owned land owned by provinces, owned by local government? Because, you know, some of the land is registered in the province, some national, some local government. And will it just be for agricultural land? Do you have any such management of all state-owned land? I've got an answer here at the back. In fact, what I was maybe using the wrong word, is there audits? Have you ever done an audit so that you know? And I think we've asked this question before already. The second question, Chairperson, is... with the macro structure of the department, you explained to us that this one branch, the Geospatial Services Technology, they're going to deal with also looking at renewable energy, you know, new ways of creating energy. But do you have part of this unit, a department that will deal with climate change? I'm just afraid that we're going to plan all of these developments of rural development, and in the meantime, our climate has changed. The patterns have changed completely. You know, we're going to experience severe droughts and this whole issue of massive storms. You see in the mudslides, for instance, in Uganda and in other African countries. Where do you deal with climate change in the whole planning model that you've got? The third one, I wanted to know what percentage of our land constitutes arable land, land that is fit for agriculture. Because we when we talk about land redistribution and the rural development program, we're referring to that percentage of land. So if you can just tell us what percentage of land is fit for that. Then I've got a proposal, Chairperson, on the review of ESTA, the ESTA legislation. I was wondering whether it's not possible that the department come and share with us even before the bill comes to Parliament, just on the principles of what it is that you want to change in ESTA. So that by the time it comes to us, we don't need to then go and reopen the principles, the aim of the bill, but that we understand it. If it's possible, I think it will assist the committee if we are in on, you know, what principles you want to change in the bill and why. Those are my four questions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start by asking the question on the decision by the department. I see that the DG has included the ENE discussion with the Department of Finance, what's that called. My main concern, Chairperson, is the huge down budgeting for restitution. I'm worried about the fact that we basically, if I work it out without the personnel and the 25% for recapitalization, it will work out about 900 million rand that we had for restitution for this year. I would like to find out from the department what are they looking for, because if you look at the budget that we got from
tabled, and also the strategic plan. Even if you look at the amount of plans that they want to finalize per year, it differs. It's not the same in the strategic plan in this budget. In the budget, it talks about 120 and here it's 90 or something for the year. So I want to know, what is your plan? Because it still seeks, if you look at this, of finalizing all these restitution plans by 2014, but with this budget, we are not going to do it. That was my first question. And then, Chair, I'm really very concerned about the relationship between the department and Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry towards the STRIF and RIT, which I spoke about last time. I think it's very important that we also get the plans from the Department of Agriculture on the revitalization of the struggling projects. If I looked at the budget for rural development, and the DG also explained that, basically we only budgeted for personnel in that department. So we have to know what is what that Department of Agriculture would bring to the table in the relationship. I don't know what's going on. Okay, that was the second one. And then, Chair, the other one is the communal land and the whole issue of Clara. I think we have to speed up the process of how we are going to finalize that. I think that that links also with the what's it called, cadastral or the viewing or the mapping or the what needs to happen to finalize that. I think we need to get clarity on that. It's an issue that comes up. I know that there's a court case again at the moment going around the constitutionality of Clara. I think this department must finalize that. We can't from year to year come up back with the same thing, and I don't see anything on that. And then, Chair, the outstanding matter also for me is that we need to discuss the new strategy of the department with the recapitalization. We are waiting for what we discussed last week, the contract or what will be signed between the beneficiaries. If you get money for recapitalization, the process that would be followed. I think I will just stop there at this moment.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciated what the DG has presented to us. There are so many interesting things that he has mentioned. Special to us who are staying in the rural area. But I think the important thing is cluster departments must talk to each other, because you mentioned tangible things. When you go there to the department, let's say increase the number of small-scale farmers. When I come to this Department of Rural Development, I'll be referred to the Department of Agriculture. When I go to the Department of Agriculture, they say they haven't got enough funds to implement. Now, only to find yourself from pillar to pole, not to achieving anything. I think it's very, very important that the department, the budget of all these departments must talk to each other, so that when you say, you mention about the deep tanks, you mention training of the landowners, you mention school gardens, livestock, but all this, when I come to your department, I say, no, we need this. You refer me to another department. I can appreciate if DGs can sit down and see where to start this. Otherwise, we won't implement anything. Like me, I'm from the tribal land in the rural area. But the department seems to concentrate more to the land that is being claimed by certain people. But we have a lot of arable land in the rural areas. All what we need the support from the department. But the department haven't got funds. You need fencing. You go to the Department of Agriculture, they say they haven't got enough funds to fence. You need equipment. They say, no, they haven't got anything regarding that on their budget. That makes everything very, very difficult and impossible to be implemented. I also need to mention about the livestock pet. You know, if the department can support the people of livestock, cattle and sheep, it is not even easy to breed stock because of thieves. You are in the rural area and they are not plowing, they are not using their land for cultivation, but they are stealing your own stock until you feel now that no man, it is of no use to continue with this. You report to the police, no people arrested. If they are arrested, they can be just out within day's time with bail. But they will find that that case disappeared. We need the support from the department to implement all this. We say we need a school charge, a school. How many, 8 hours or 7 hours, I don't know how many hours. For a child to be in school. Now, when you mention the garden, you are causing a trouble to the children. You are against us now. So, no, the department, you are told that you must be at school in class all the time. But when we were small children there attending school, we were doing this gardening. We were taught there. Because if you want to put anything for life, you must teach a child to do that. Not a single parent will ever teach a child how to pray the Lord's Prayer. But you repeat this thing now and again, and then you'll find your child, he or she will say this without any thinking for the rest of his life. And it's a good idea that we do something at school, but there are no water. Cannot implement a garden with a JoJo tank. We need water there. If they build some boreholes, they don't maintain them. They are all not working. So we are there, members of parliament. We know this thing there. All what we need is just to give a support to this, because we can just implement all this and make it working. If the department can just support us enough. Thank you.
Kune license yothetha ayeka phi inkosi ithi mayiyeke khona. Kodwa ndiyacela uba angalandelwa la mzekelo kaPhezulu noko thathe isithuba ecacisa imbuzo. In English, I was admitting that Inkosis have a license to speak as long as they like. But I think that it's not an example to be emulated. We have limited time in the committee. So the three hands that are up now, don't raise your question and motivate. Just ask the question. Please follow the example of Ms. Dillian. She asked four questions in a brief moment. Madam.
Thank you very much, Jay. I will try and be very short. I'm still going back to this issue of the minister revealing that 90% of redistributed funds are now unproductive. My question is, I got the write-up, I mean the press clipping that came from this. So I am asking myself, if they are, and you are telling us about recapitalization, now these 90% really, I suppose they've been recessed and we have a copy of them and we know where the failures are. And so in our recapitalization now, what are we going to do with them? Is it part of this? And if it is, have we got a plan that we can say, here is the plan of these 90% that have failed? Then the second question is whether the department, which is indeed new, has benchmarked itself on the Millennium Development Goals. And if so, I just would like to be interested in what they actually done. The last one, Chair, is the two-year contract in line with the EPA deputy. So we all know the story of the contracts and the problem of the exiting. And we know the difficulties, how people hang on to these contracts and they don't want to exit now, and it becomes... So I just wanted to find out if you have a plan, particularly the evaluation plan in the middle of this, and how people will exit. What kind of skills will they have obtained in the process? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, DG, for your presentation. My first question is with regard to, it's on the slide number 4, with regard to the state of the nation address by the president, where you indicated that there's going to be a rolling out of CRDP 260 watts in the next 4 years. So I just want to find out if that is enough in 4 years' time, because so many people just, they want development in the rural areas. And since putting rural development in the forefront as one of the priorities, people there are now looking. So is that enough? That's my first question. And the second one is with regard to the land tenure system reform. You also suggested two options that you actually need to venture into. And the first one, you're talking of productive land will become a national asset. So I just want to find out if you, the national asset you refer to nationalize, or are you implying that those people who they've got land, they must be actually monitored or actually requested to use that land optimally. If they're not using that land, then there's something that you're going to take. So I just want a thorough explanation with regard to that. And the second one is with regard to the categorization of farmers. I just want to find out if that you're still going to do that with regard to those people who have already claimed, you transferred land to them. How are you going to do it so that we can see those actually people in those farms actually using their skills relevant to what they actually know better? And my third question. My fourth one is with regard to the institutions and the community. You also encourage people to have gardens in their yards, and also the schools. And you indicated that schools will be supported by JoJo tanks to have their gardens. But you didn't mention what's going to happen to the households where people in their yard will be making their gardens. Because if they don't have water, I don't think that garden will flourish. So I just want to find out as to whether the 1.2 billion that you indicated in the water affair, They also go into to make boreholes in those rural communities, so that those people who are interested in actually doing the gardens in their yards, they go into, so that they could benefit. I just want to find out, because you also, you only mentioned school, but if Jojo Tank is in a school, it cannot support the whole community. So I just want you to elaborate on that one. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. Congratulations to the department. I can see today we have some women in management, and we hope to see more. We've been looking at all these ugly men all the time. Thanks, Chairperson. I want to know again, how
you are not asking a question.
How many more are still going to
she
come?
She has back? Always been here.
That is the question. How many more? Well, Chairperson, the all development in the country takes place within wards, and I take it that the strategic plan of the department must be informed somehow by what is happening within the wards, particularly in the rural areas. How much influence do you get from the IDB plans of district municipalities when you do all these plans? I may have not seen it, but I have not seen how many of the 200 is going to be included in this MPF. That's the first question. The second question is relating to you're saying that you are covering 20 wards now. By 2014, you're going to be covering 106. 160, not 106. The document continuously says 106. 160. Oh, okay. Well, I've been pointing to the CEO over here next week. We're looking at 106. Page what? Another page is to the bureau. It's better than the 106. This is 106 words. ignore. But the question is still relevant. How many wars are there in the country? We will exclude the urban wars. We're focusing on rural development. That's your interest. How many wars are there in the country? Because we must then compare the amount of money that you are going to spend on 106 wards vis-a-vis the rest of those that are waiting to get the benefit. Then the third question relates to the Rural Development Agency bill. You said, Digi, this is an implementation arm of rural development. There are three explanations you need to give us, Digi. Who's doing the work now on your behalf? Who's currently doing the work? Remember, we were listening to the Auditor General yesterday. Is it the National Treasurer is saying your coordination role is going to be converted into implementation role later. Now, I see the later may be referring to the Rural Development Agency. I'm assuming. Staffing. Is it going to be the same staff that you have now, which you have transferred from the Commission to your department, or are you going to create new staffing for the Rural Development Agency? By which year? Which is year one of the development of that agency? Number four, ne? Page 38, slide 38, or page 38, I'm not sure whether it's slide or page. You are talking about Tucson centers, 120 of them. But you are putting a very, it's like the slide of the Auditor General yesterday. There's a blank page that says if you cannot be specific, you rather not let mention it. In this one, you are saying availability of strategy. I'm not sure what you're referring to. Page 38? Can you see that? What is that referring to? Are you going to do this to South Siders or not? Or is it dependent on the availability of strategy? What are you referring to? And then, fifth question. It says 45,200 jobs created. And then it talks about the growth of those jobs to 212,000 because of the CRDP sites, one job per family strategy. You want to learn to teach? That is not clear to me, did you, whether you are saying the current jobs that have been created are 45,200 in the pilot. It does not say. And they will grow to 220,000 by 2014. What is it referring to? It's not clear to me. And if you are going to create 212,000 jobs by 2014, why would you train only 10,600? Which is linked to what Ms. Ballinger is talking about. If I am reading your document wrongly, please advise me, because I don't quite understand the linkages between these numbers. And the last question is relating directly to Prince Zulu's question. You see, this whole document is dependent on other departments playing a role. And the straightforward question is, what leverage does this department have over other departments? I'm not quite sure whether the other departments would change their plans simply because there is a project that has been developed in the rural development wherein they must slot in. I'm not quite sure. Unless Prince Zulu's question will be answered on the basis that they plan together now on all these projects for the rest of the period. Thank you.
the minister will run to the president all the time and say, Mr. President, I'm starting a project in Msinga. Would you ask other departments to come along with me? Or is there a different route to follow?
I'm going to ask my colleagues to take the questions relevant to them. I will start with Ndu with all the questions that are relevant to his component. And I will go to Leona, and she will take the relevant questions. Then I will cover the rest.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, the first question from Honorable Delil. Regarding the State Land Management Board. The first thing that I perhaps need to say, Chair, is that the proposals, the idea of an establishment of a State Land Management Board is a matter of discussion that will be in the green paper that will be established for debate. Already the department has acquired a lot of land under PLAS, which we currently manage as a department in a trading account. But the department is also a custodian of state land elsewhere, I mean all over the country, practically all your former homeland. So we are already a custodian of vast amounts of land. Indeed, it is true that other provincial government departments, including municipalities, are custodians of land. I think the idea here is that the department is saying you've got to have national policy that regulates use of land, all state land, so that you don't have every sphere of government determining how its own land is going to be used. But this is something that is going to be put in the public domain as part of the discussion in the green paper process. You also asked about the question of the state land audit. All departments, including municipalities, are required by law to have complete asset register insofar as their land holdings are concerned. And this is the process that is underway across government. And the department is working together with a cluster of other departments, specifically, particularly public works, to complete this exercise so that there is a full conclusive asset register, which obviously as you acquire more land and you dispose of it, you've got to be updating it over a period of time. There are specific legislative requirements for all of us to do that. The focus of this agricultural land holding or state land management board, Honorable Chair, is not to look at all land, urban and rural and industrial. We are talking about primarily agricultural land. You've asked the question about the extent of what is regarded as agricultural land. If you're looking at the whole country, you are talking about something like over 120 million hectares of land. According to our cadastral information, you have about 83 million hectares of agricultural land in South Africa. But within that, you then have a very limited amount of what is called arable or high potential agricultural land, which is estimated to be around 3 million hectares. So that's the kind of the breakdown that you're talking about. Honorable Dale, you also asked about whether the department can share in advance the principles of what the department seeks to change in the land tenure bill. We obviously have got a very rigorous parliamentary process or cabinet process and a parliamentary process. So we've got to consult to see about the feasibility of sharing that information outside of these parliamentary processes that have been given to us to religiously follow to take any legislation through to Parliament, from Cabinet up to Parliament. So we can't give you an outright answer. We've got to go back and establish if that is feasible or not. On recapitalization, or I would say, we're having a meeting with the Department of Agriculture precisely to look at integrating. If you look at our strat plan where we are talking about recapitalization and development, we are saying in our narrative specifically around land reform and recapitalization and development, we are saying our resources that are allocated to the department will be complemented by resources from the Department of Forest, of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, but also provincial equitable share from provincial government departments. So, as the DG said, ours we will initiate, but we've got to drive this project leading from the fund, supported by agriculture. We obviously have to work very closely with them. I think this, I hope this answers the question. On the question of Clara, when the strategic plan may not be explicit about Clara per se because of the constitutional issues, but if you are talking about tenure system reform, you are including communal areas in which Clara applies. So the green paper process must address that. It is then going to be part of that discussion. The recapitalization and development process, this is a cross-cutting question that has been asked by different honorable members. The recapitalization and development is primarily and essentially a food security program that we must implement together with other departments. We are finalizing setting out a very clear process. We know where these farms are that we've acquired since 1994. For instance, one of the teams that we have in the department will be doing all the spatial information analysis of all of them in relation to their location. This is important for various reasons. It must look at additional attribute information in terms of water availability, state of the infrastructure generally in those localities. But I think, Honorable Nshaleng, it's even more important that we are now going to be mapping all these land reform projects, what by what, throughout the country, so that on one hand, the department is able to even measure its footprint, just looking at the recapitalization and development program alone. How many wards have we covered? If you look at the information per ward, it tells you what is the population in a ward. So in actual fact, you are able to measure if the land reform the projects are turned around, are sustainable. You'll be able to know in this particular ward, if this project is successful, on how many people's lives directly in that particular ward is this particular project impacting. So that is the work that we are doing. We have a team that is leading this, but it is a cross-functional team of all the branches of the department. It is not the branch land reform, but it is a cross-functional team of all these branches because each of us have got different things. There's this spatial information analysis that I'm talking about. There's the socio-economic profiling. There is the physical assessment of the conditions of the farm leading to a development of a plan. We will not release the money until there is a plan that we are satisfied with. Attached to that plan will be conditions under which we make the assistance, the financial assistance by the department available, so that we are able to hold this particular community or this particular farmer to certain conditions, so that we don't just put money into that particular project without the requisite outcome in relation to jobs, in relation to productivity, and so on and so on. Honorable Panindela, I think I have responded to the question that you have asked. Precisely, recapitalization and development is to target all land reform projects implemented since 1994. So we'll be profiling them. But obviously, because of the volume, we can't deal with them in one financial year. We've got to stagger them over a period of time. But ultimately, we'll be able to cover all of them over a period of time. I think there's a question about land being a national asset. I think, this issue, Honorable Swate, is related to the issue of the Land Management Board, which is one of the discussing issues in the green paper process. We're not pronouncing on anything. It's a whole list of options, baskets of options that are going to be put through the green paper process to the public when the green paper is out for purposes of debate. So we are not definitive about this being the route or that being the route. It's something that must be discussed by South Africans through the green paper process. On the categorization, I was not certain, Chair, whether the question was referring to categorization of land already transferred to land reform beneficiaries or other land. Farmers, commercial farmers in general. No, precisely, this categorization, the recapitalization and development, the processes that I've outlined, one of the things that will be done in the socio-economic profile is to determine what is the capacity of that particular farm in relation to the needs of those people on that farm. Are these people fitting under category one, who simply just want a place to stay? Are these people who want to farm? Are the institutions or structures, whether it is trust or a CPA, that was established in 1994, the most appropriate instrument or vehicle for that particular enterprise? If it is not, what needs to be done? This is a whole process that is part and parcel of the recapitalization. Obviously, some of the projects will be restructured. Obviously, we'll need the full cooperation of the beneficiaries themselves. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I will begin then with the question asked by the Honourable Prince Zulu in terms of the fact that we seem to be concentrating on private or land that was redistributed or under land reform instead of communal land. Actually, the program is twofold. What we are doing is that in terms of the recapitalization of all land reform projects, we are utilizing the CRDP principles. But the Comprehensive Rural Development Program is largely targeting rural areas, and communal areas are included in that. Many of the pilots that we're currently running are actually in communal areas. So there is no exclusion of communal areas. They are actually one of the key target areas of this particular program. The second issue was around the school garden project and how will we ensure that children, are doing this if we're going to be making water available, et cetera, especially because many of the areas we work in do not have water. Indeed, the school garden project, as well as the clinic and other institutional projects, as well as the household garden project, our intention is to make water available. And I think the question was also asked by Honorable Swati. So we are looking at different mechanisms of doing that, not only your JoJo tanks linked to your boreholes, but also your water harvesting, rainwater harvesting tanks are also being included. And in Moesha, we've already put up about 60 rainwater harvesting tanks as well for communities to do their household food gardens. So there's a number of different options that we're looking at in terms of ensuring that water is available for those gardens to actually become productive. The question of the coordination of this program with cluster departments, most definitely, I think throughout the entire planning stage, we realized that this program cannot be done by us as a department alone. So we are very involved with the departments that are relevant to this program, and in many cases it is cutting across all sector departments. And so we are participating in those relevant clusters and also planning with those departments as we do our targeting for these particular programs. I've already touched on the questions, some of the questions asked by Member Swati. But the question asked then by Honourable Member in Chabaleng, in terms of all our development taking place in wards and how much influence do we get from the IDPs that are already existing for these wards. Most definitely, we work together with the IDPs, together with the councillors in those wards, and we integrate the social profiling results that come from the household profiling that we do with the information that is contained within the IDPs. Now, the IDPs sometimes have not really gone down to the actual detail level that this program we are implementing may go to. So we are integrating the two and then listing the priorities. So we are not leaving the IDPs out of this particular process. Chairperson, you asked a question in terms of the number of wards and the issue of the 160 versus the number of wards in the country. We're looking at about 3,700 wards in the country, which would include your urban, your peri-urban, and your rural areas. And from our information that we've gotten from CGTA, we've been able to say that there's certain municipalities which could be categorized as purely rural, and we're looking at around about 1,800. But we are working with them in actually getting a definite figure on rural, because there's different definitions and what you want to include, et cetera. But in some cases, we've even included the small peri-urban towns as well. So we're looking at about 1,800. The 160 that we will do then over the 4 years is obviously not yet a 10% of that particular amount of wards. But again, our program is aligned to budget as well. The issue in terms of the jobs
I just wanted to add on this one that we should have reported that the cabinet has decided that the war on poverty is going to be on our department, and is there moving there on the 1st of April. So all the program that they are doing, they are working on 1,128 wards. And that's on page, what page is it in the strat plan? On the strat plan, we have indicated that from the 1st of April, those 1,128 wards are going to be part of the work that we are talking about. This is on page 34 of the strategic plan. But I just wanted to warn the members that we did indicate that even though we have been told that there are close to 1,800 rural wards in the country, we do not want to mislead ourselves into believing that we can tackle all the wards at once. So this is just an indicative program to say this is where we would like to go. If you want to measure our effectiveness, just watch us on these 160 wards. Come and test us that we are really doing what we are supposed to do. So that is the approach. Intention is not to do all of the 1,800 wards in South Africa in one go. So that's the basis of saying it will be 160. But we're also saying through this other program of war on poverty, we will also be working in the 1,128 wards through the war on poverty. You can continue.
Chair, the question that you raised around the 212,000 jobs versus the 45,000 jobs, the 45,000 jobs is the number of jobs that we intend to create on those farms that will be recapitalized. So it's on the land reform projects that we are recapitalizing. The 212,000 jobs are the jobs that we want to create one member per household in the 160 wards or the 106 wards over the next 3 years that we will be working in. So that is the distinction between those two figures. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, coming to the other questions that the honourable members asked, on the macro structure, do we have the new component covering renewable energy and climate change? The answer is yes. We are working with the Department of Environmental Affairs on this matter. We have watched the international conventions. We have been participating in the CSD 17 and CSD 18 of the United Nations, which covers this climate change, desertification, and other programs that relate to rural development. So we are definitely working closely with the Department of Energy. It was the Department of Energy, for example, in Moyeshe, that talked to some of the issues of energy in that CRDP site. So in the component, yes, we are working with the relevant departments and stakeholders. And as I indicated to you, we are working with CSIR in terms of what are the appropriate technologies in this regard. And the education of the communities about climate change. Some people do not really believe on this thing, climate change. We want to educate them about the impact of the human action on our environment and how it can affect future generations. So that component is definitely there. On the question of the restitution budget, we know that this is very small. As you were taken through yesterday, that it would be 1 billion to 2.5 billion to 3 billion in the following year in terms of this. And then there was a scale that was different in land reform. We have discussed with National Treasury, and in fact, it has been the practice over the years that when there are commitments that we must undertake on land transfers, we are using this budget in alignment the land acquisition budget that we are having. So we have discussed this with National Treasury, and they are aware that we do have commitments, and the land is getting more expensive. So they are aware of this or of this challenge. So our discussion with them is that this matter is a serious matter that may need review. In this baseline, they have approved the amount that has been explained to you yesterday by National Treasury. And we are still in constant discussion with them to look at the various challenges that we're having around the outstanding claims. This is why we're talking about the whole review of this. One of the things that we're raising is we need to look at this thing. What do we do? And we know that this is not only a problem affecting South Africa only. I've reported to you that Germany is stuck with this type of a problem. They've got a restitution program, but they can't deal with forestry land claims because they are affecting the Perth in a very significant manner. They are like us. They have settled about 80% of their restitution claims in Germany, but they are stuck with, for example, forestry claims. They are stuck with the estates of big estates like we have here, sugar estates. These big estates, which are very costly, are one of the challenges that we have to deal with as to what do we do, what is the manner of settling this claim. Is the manner of settling this claim that of buying the land with the business on the land, or is it the manner of buying the land only and then make a business arrangement? I gave you the example of the model that we're pursuing with Mondi. Mondi is the forestry paper company. Mondi has got a lot of forest land that is under claim. We have discussed with them that can we pay only for the land and not for the trees? Because once you build, you factor in the trees in the land valuation, it becomes impossible for the state to buy this land at that cost. So what we're saying is to review the models of settling these outstanding claims. What could be the reasonable models? Is it paying for the land and the trees and everything? Is it paying for the land and the sugar cane crops that are there? Or is it buying just the land and buy the equity share of the people in the business instead of just pay for the land like we have been doing so far? And we buy this land and we kick out the current landowners out of the land, and these projects collapse in the hands of the new beneficiaries. So what we're saying is that part of the review is that. Should you fast track and move ahead with the payment of this, or should we reflect? And the reflection is saying mix capitalization and development, equity share development with the restoration of the land rights. Those are the type of things that we're talking about. And to answer the question about whether we have got research on the 90% announced by the minister, I want to say that the reports that we've been using of 50% of these projects are failing is based on two reports that we reflected on. We did a report on the settled claims, the restitution claims. That report, which was conducted by a research service provider, showed that 50% of the claims in restitution were failing. So that's why we were talking about 50% failing. It was based on that report. And then we had another report on LRAD.
It showed that 49% of the LRADS projects were failing and the other 51 were working. And now we had done this other report. I'm going to circulate this report. It's about the plus projects. Now, the plus projects, the report that we did on these plus projects showed that we used the three colors to indicate the status of the projects. Some we used the green for the very good projects that were operating normally, and we used yellow to say that those projects were operating good, but they are flags where we need to support those projects on. And then we used the red, and red indicates the projects that were really in trouble and they needed immediate intervention. So we use, in terms of that report, if you use that report, you could say 24% of the plus projects are in rage. They are sick and they are in real trouble. And then 51% of those projects were yellow, which meant that they were working but not effective, and they are a serious cause for concern because they are yellow. That is 51%. And then there is 25% which were green. So if we are going to use this report, it will show that actually it's 75% of the projects that have got problems, if you add the 24% and the 51%. So that is the list that we have around what has been researched in terms of these projects. But with us, it is not the numbers that are talking, but the statement that says you have got problems with these projects. You need to pay attention to these projects. This research was done by forensic auditors for all of the projects, and they indicate province by province which ones are problematic where, in which area. So if you ask me, like Honorable Balindela is asking, where is the research? What research did you use to inform you about the problem areas? These are the three research reports that were done. But if you listen to the report that we got from the DA, which they shared with us, they indicated that most of the projects are actually sick. So I'm saying the issue there that is that you want to look at is what do you do with the sick projects? And our response to that was to establish this recapitalization and development fund, which is about 575 million to do that. That is clearly not adequate. So that's why we are talking with Department of Agriculture to say, what is it that you are putting on the table to, if you like, on the recapitalization and development program going forward? That is the work in progress. So I was trying to cover that one. And then the issue of the land tenure system reform, about the national asset, whether we're talking about nationalization, the answer is we are not talking about nationalization. All we are saying is if people treat things like water as a national asset, they cannot do anything that they want to do with water. It must be regulated so that every citizen in South Africa will have access to water. That is the spirit with which we are approaching this thing. That you can't just do anything with water, because everyone in South Africa must have water. So you can't just play with water. So we are saying with land that land must be treated as so important that it is like water. If you waste it, future generations will accuse you of being irresponsible. So it must be treated as a national asset. So we believe that the state has a critical role to play in ensuring that all citizens make optimal use of the land, will not allow land to go to waste. So the state must intervene in ensuring that every citizen has got access to land and is using the land, and access to food. You can't be keeping this asset and it is not producing food and you have nothing to do because it is privately owned. It must be a national asset for everyone else. So that is the spirit with which we were trying to look at this thing. Of course, we are not having a resolved position on this thing. We are saying in the green paper process, we would like your inputs in this debate. This is what we are challenging you to come up with in the green paper. And then on the categorization of farm, yes, we will look at the skills. The question was whether we are considering the abilities of the people. Yes, if people are good in livestock farming, like in KZN, the reason there are evictions and all of that is because the farmers, the black farmers in KZN, are having too many cattle, and then the commercial farmers say, no, man, you can't have too many cattle on my land. So that is the reason for the evictions and things like that. So we're saying if people are good with livestock farming, why don't you enable them to have more land for livestock farming? So that is the type of thing that we are talking about. They will use those skills. You are good in livestock, you are good in sheep, you are good in goats and cattle, excel in that area. You are good in chicken farming, excel in that area. So those are the considerations that we'll make in this categorization. And okay, I wanted him to speak to Msinga because I wanted him not to use the words numbers, but the words names, so that it's clear where we are in Msinga, because we are in Msinga affecting three words at least, four words. So I want him to, because he knows those names there in KZN, what are the names of the four words that we are working on? Do can you give us those words?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chief. I don't know the specific names, but all I know is that Isema Bomvini, everything. Is that enough, man? Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. And then on the other question that has not been responded to is the coordination of the work to date in relation to the Rural Development Agency. We are looking at this. We have consulted with IDT, and we are looking at what IDT is capable of doing. So far, we are using IDT for this job creation program. They are working in these various areas to sign the contracts with the people, the two-year contracts. And they've got their skills, but they've got limitations also. So what we have said with IDT is that we will engage them according to their area of specialization. Then we will have a specific contract with them in that particular area. And we did the same with DBSA and IDC, where we've got specific areas where they can have an input. We are contracting them around that. With Land Bank, we know that they are a development bank in terms of their legislation. So under this recapitalization program, we have talked about what is it that we would work with Land Bank. We have not refined that so far. We have just agreed that we must work with Land Bank around their program, where we have allocated $207 million to assist with the support of the emerging farmers through the land bank process. So we have still not agreed exactly what would be the which institution would be relevant. So we are using them so far on a contract basis by signing service level agreements on specific projects. Now, internally, will we use our staff for that RDA? Let me confirm with you that we have established a trading account in the department, working with National Treasury, to deal with all the land that is going concerns. And we believe that this is going to be a platform for such work that could be done by this RDA, Rural Development Agency, in future. It will be a good platform. So So there we have got staff in the department. We are employing, we are advertising in this organogram. We do have the structure for that component, which is running our trading account so far. You must remember that this is very brand new to us. So we do not have, we are advertising those posts. We don't have warm bodies at the moment. We do have about 6 people that are working on the structuring of that. But it is envisaged here that that component will actually do the groundwork for the establishment of that rural development agent. As you said, the bill, we think that bill will see the light of day in 2012. And if that is the bill in 2012, we think that this agency could be established in something like 2013, 2014, depending on how what progress we make in finalizing that bill. But yes, the staff that are there in our trading account component in the department will definitely look at what would be the kind of terms of reference or the kind of function for that rural development agency at that time. I think those were the questions that were raised. If we missed any other, we'll come in. Oh, sorry, sir. On the MDGs.
Remaining questions and deal with them later. I don't know whether we'll have enough time. What choice do you give me? Even since you want to have follow-up questions.
Mine is not a follow-up on the content, it's on the process. And I wanted to make a suggestion, if you will allow me.
Question to make up my mind. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a chairperson, just in view of the fact that we've changed and Parliament is now operating according to the new money bill, I want to thank the department for the strategic plan. But what is even more important for the committee now to monitor what you are doing is that if we can have access to your business plan and to your operational plan. If I'm suggesting, Chairperson, if they can share that with us, because then we can monitor and see whether you are doing your work. Because the Rural Development Agency has not been yet established, so we still have to evaluate the performance of the department, and we can only do that through the operational plan and the business plan. So that is a suggestion that I want to make, Chair.
We are committing that we would share the implementation operational plan, which is linked to this strategic plan. We can do that. Yeah, and I think on the MDGs, I just wanted to say that the MDGs cover the broad issues of health, education, and the issues of access to basic services. We are contributing definitely to that, yeah, and poverty alleviation. So we are linked to that. Thank you very much.
Chief, not really a follow-up, but also Mr. Shivani did speak about that in his follow-up, and I see before we go to Ngonyama Transport, if we look at the budget, and I had a question mark next to that. It says departmental agencies and accounts, and under that you have the Ngonyama Transport, and then it has something that says agricultural landholding account. I don't know if we can just get clarity on what that is, because I see there's a huge adjustment to the budget being made since 2006-07, and exactly what that is. I don't know if we're supposed to get a report on that or whatever, like we get in Ngonyama Trust, and what that is.
Chairperson, I've just spoken to that, that this is the trading account. That is the trading account. It's going to be audited separately. So just like you are getting the reports through us or for the deeds office, the deeds office is audited separately. We present to you the audit account for the deeds office. This component is going to be audited separately. That's the entity I was talking to that is run within the department. And our acting CFO is currently the head of that that component. He's going to be driving that exactly. So we'll report definitely to the committee on that one.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think the DG has spoken at length in terms of the policies, and what I want to say to you and the honourable members is the following, is that our summary of the stress plan, which is the presentation, is before you now. I think I can summarize this in relatively a short space of time. Firstly, what I want to say is the following. I'll only concentrate on the following pages for purposes of presentation. It's page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 9, page 11, page 21, 22, 23, and 24. So it won't be that long. But so that the matter is understood better, I think we tend to repeat ourselves each time we are called by you or this committee. On page 2, it gives you, in a summary fashion, the size of the land under Ngonyama Trust, which is about 2.7 million hectares. Once all the land that is destined for Ngonyama Trust is transferred, and once all the land that needs to be excised has been excised, more or less, I still believe that we will remain with close to about 3 million hectares of land. On this land, we have about 1,491 titles registered, and that the land straddles across all 61 municipalities in the province. The population living on this land as at 2001 was just over 4.5 million, and I think the latest information may reveal that it's about 6 million people living on this land. There are 241 traditional councils or traditional authorities which have jurisdiction over trust land. And the trust is set up in terms of an act of parliament. In a nutshell, the strategic plan for Ngonyama Trust really is a plan around the management of land which is substantially communal in nature. But there are a few pockets which are urban or peri-urban. The DG has made reference to, for instance, tenure reform, We also emphasize that, but we don't have powers of formulating legislation to analyze and create new forms of tenure. So in page 3, really what I want then to read is the last bullet, which says the strategic issues raised in the strategic plan will facilitate achieving the objectives of optimal land usage for the material benefit and social well-being of the communities living on Oyama land. But if I keep on reading, it may not make sense, but let me explain what in a nutshell is in this third plan. We are saying, what is a typical rural or communal setup in South Africa? We say that is a place where you acquire land through oral tradition, not documents. What rights are you given? They are not documented. If everybody is guessed at the end of the day what the content of those rights are. So what we are then doing, one, we are documenting those rights where they are vulnerable. We create a system. You would notice that predominantly we are talking about leases, where effectively we are trying to give a tangible document to the communities which live on communal land as evidence of the right that they have on land. And the closest instrument that is understood across South Africa is a lease. And what differs are the content of each lease. And once a person is accorded that document, what then happens is the following, is that that person is able to go to a financial institution if he or she wants to use that instrument, because a lease is an acceptable instrument, to obtain finances so that he or she can upgrade his or her property. For instance, I read, if I may digress slightly, Chair, I was reading the Sunday Tribune about one model that we've used, but what is quite interesting in this paper, it comes under sport. Why it comes under sport? It says, if I may read, the world's second largest tiger fishing contest, which takes place at Jozini Dam in northern Zululand, has received the first of several boosts. What is that? Is that in Oyama Trust, with the community, on the land owned by the community, with the funding from IDC and a private developer, has developed a 100 million rand hotel, which is a four-star hotel, which is essentially owned by this community because it's under a leasehold for 40 years. And this hotel has started operating this month, that we start from the 1st of March. It's owned by the community on its land. The private developer will be able to access, to recover his investment. It is funded by IDC joined with the National Empowerment Fund. But also what I'm saying is all the years people have been flying to Victoria Falls for tiger fishing because this was a hidden part of the world. But if you read the newspaper and the sport, which says this is the second largest tiger fishing sport, you'd realize that this is what the community is able to do. Of this, as I'm currently talking, the community has been able to create 40 permanent jobs as the first phase this month. So what that tries to illustrate is that if you go to any communal land, it does not have value until such time that you have created instrument documenting the rights that are possessed by that community, and you are able to trade off those rights commercially. But again, if I may digress for a minute, Chair, this is not in this presentation, but I have touched base with the DG and the DDG. All that which you sit here and the honorable members and parliament may, however, be an exercise in futility if I don't place it on record that the greatest threat on communal land is the Municipal Property Rights Act, because all communal land is now, for the first time in history, subject to rates. I say this because we at Ingonyama Trust already, we are in court with two municipalities, which are rightly demanding the rates. And I must say that, of course, we believe we have a case for different reasons, but the fact of the matter is we cannot keep on escaping. You'll notice that in our budget for rates is 10 million rand. But you'll also notice that on page 5, on my slide, you'll notice that we only get less than 10 million rand from government. So anything that these communities may derive from use of land will preoccupy them in paying municipalities, because this is not only confined to Ingonyama land, but it so happened because Ingonyama Trust happened to be that entity which holds communal land in KZN. But I want to believe that all communal land and other state land, because even schools these days are required to pay rent, that this is the biggest threat. I am glad, however, to say that the DG and the DDG are currently in discussion with the DG under cooperative governance and traditional affairs. But amending legislation, we all know how long it will take. But the fact of the matter is, I'm saying this in this house because I know most of the members around here, their professional work is to ask people to vote for them, that we are going towards the local government elections, and this would be one of the sore points in the forthcoming year. Having said that, I wish to move forward and then indicate that on page 4, what we're saying is that the legislation has created a unique instrument, and that we're saying commercial activities must benefit the local communities, and the contracts entered to with the commercial sector must contain a provision which requires that benefit. Hence, I was referring to that Josini Tiger Fish Sporting as well as the hotel there. But there are many other projects like this currently underway. What is, however, important as well, and if I hope this committee could also be of assistance, one of the other threats to communities which have got mining opportunities is that currently there is a legislation which seeks to take away royalties which are currently paid to communities by mining houses and declare them state asset. Meaning, in other words, those communities which have mining opportunities, of which, among others, Ingonyama Trust is one, the little that they've been getting under the mineral royalties will soon disappear. And therefore, that will minimize the income that is earmarked for communities or which communities can self-generate with their land. That is something that I think is important to emphasize on. But generally, like I say, on day-to-day basis, communal land in the whole country, one is not surveyed. The questions that were raised to the DG, similarly to some extent apply to us. But let me explain to you what we think are the output of the exercises of this tenure information system, which we constantly have to upgrade and create. At the end of the day, we want to have a situation when you look at under any district, under any ward, you must be able to get to Ingonyama Trust website and get the size of each piece of land occupied by a member of the community, what rights are there, what use thereof is. At this stage, by law, all communal land in South Africa is, strictly speaking, in the deeds office is agricultural land. So what you are supposed to be seeing, you are supposed to be seeing wildlife, livestock, and maize mill, not people. Because classification-wise, communal land is classified as agricultural land. So these are the challenges which with the cooperation of municipalities, provincial government, we are trying in a nutshell to come to a conclusion that there are proper settlement plans, there is proper land use allocation, there is proper zoning, despite the fact that the trust owns rural land. So for purposes of KZN, insofar as Ingonyama Trust is concerned, when one talks about rural development, that means a partnership between the provincial government, national government, local government, and Ingonyama Trust. Ingonyama Trust therefore facilitates development in the sense of ensuring that there is clear information about the tenure on land by each and every person, so that any developer who comes to any community is able, one, to secure his or her rights, knowing exactly what rights are there. Because one of the biggest dangers, what has happened with traditional council or amakhosi or chiefs, is that because they don't have documents about their land or rights held by them, private investors tend to draft documents which are one-sided in favor of developers for many years. Because the converse of what we are saying is that while communal land is one cheap land to access, but also is the most freehold land because it's not encumbered by financial institutions. But what does happen, of course, is that, like the DG was talking, the fact that we have now a constitutional order which does away with racial discrimination does not mean that all the title deeds were automatically cleared of those conditions. So when we are doing this tenure reform and LTIS or land information system, among the challenges we have is to remove those restrictions which were based on all those laws which are either racially discriminating or discriminating on other grounds. But just to give an example, you will still find in any deeds office in South Africa that there is land which is still in the deeds office having a restriction that this land shall not be occupied by any person of color. It does not change itself automatically because we've got constitution. It needs somebody to identify the title deed, remove those restrictions. You still have got, I hear we're all talking development here, you still got Act 70 of 1970, which is subdivision of agricultural land, which essentially means you cannot develop until you have attacked that piece of legislation. As long as that legislation is there, all these nice and grand ideas about rural development, they would fall short. So in the process, we are trying, without having the executive powers to make laws, being a parastatal, to say, how do you make do with a given environment? And as a result of that, for instance, you'll note that in page 9, we are saying, in order to support the provincial Department of Human Settlement and Rural Housing, we developed a rural housing policy jointly with the province to say, when the government wants to extend government houses to rural areas, it must be able to do so. But for the government to spend money, for instance, it must have documents. In rural areas, if you go there and you simply build houses and all these one-stop centers and so on, I see it happening quite regularly by government departments. But they do so sometimes at the risk of getting qualification because they don't have a document. Why were you building a clinic there? So within Ingonyama Trust, we have designed leases and policies where each time a school is built, a one-stop center is built or clinics, they enter into a lease with Ingonyama Trust. Likewise with public servitude and public infrastructure. So in a nutshell, what we are saying, all in all, what is contained in this document, Chairperson, we are saying we are moving from an oral tradition to a literate or literary tradition in terms of tenure rights on communal land. And at the same time, we're trying as best as we can to facilitate development by ensuring that the tenure that is allocated to the traditional system, firstly, is documented and accorded names of instrument which are understandable and acceptable to the financial institution, so that the people on that very land are able to go on with their life. I think, Chairperson, most of my presentation can be complemented by questions, because I think the document speaks on its own. But it would be evident that from the budget of 60 million that we are speaking about, you can notice that it is possible for communal land to be properly utilized, that we generate for purposes of operating about 50 million rand on our own without relying on government. With the assistance from the government in terms of improving the tenure laws and also cutting on the red tape, we are confident that people in rural areas can be able to be self-sustaining, like the DG was saying. Thank you very much. No, thanks, Chair. I was saying that you would notice that in our budget of 60 million rand, we generate on our own 50 million rand. The government is only contributing under 10 million rand. We believe that once the red tape is cut, by this what I mean is this. At this stage, if a person wants to develop, let's say, a shopping center in rural area in South Africa, you can ask many people anywhere in the country what legislation applies there. You will be shafted from pillar to post. Somebody say go to so-and-so, somebody says go to so-and-so. That's number one. Number two, the environmental legislation, which wants environmental impact assessment, is making it almost impossible for people to develop. But what we're saying, this is the kind of red tape I'm referring to say if those things could be addressed, the rural communities can be self-sustaining and self-reliant like the DG was. That was my conclusion. Thank you.
Summarized version. I'm very happy. And I would not have expected you to rush. Judges are not expected to rush when they speak. Thank you very much. I'm happy to announce that there's a gentleman here. Oh, is it a gentleman? From the gentleman. From Parliamentary Monitoring Group, he is monitoring. He's seated over there. Thank you for monitoring us, Mr. Kali. We also have Mrs. Alberta, Dr. Alberta Mayberry from the U.S. Consulate General Office, and she's also visiting us to observe what we do. She was with, I don't know where she is now. The other one? Okay. The other lady is gone now. She also was with her. The other one was political officer, attached also to the Consulate General Office. Our purpose now, it looks like we will skip lunch, and I'm glad that the honorable members, they take their work very seriously. Last night they went out to 9 o'clock
after dinner, and they worked to finish the work. So with the indulgence you're giving me, this will be the opportunity for you to ask questions from the Honorable Judge. I noticed three.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question would be, since in Judge Ngwenya's presentation, he mentioned the coalition of he mentioned that there is a different view when it comes to Municipal Property Rights Act versus the Ngonyama Trust Board. My question would be, how does Ngonyama Trust Board see the future of municipality applying the act in the areas of the Ngonyama Trust, in the areas that are under Ngonyama Trust Board? Will it be that the people will be paying the rates to, since they'll be having those leases, are they going to be paying their rates to Ngonyama Trust Board or to municipalities? No, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Judge raised a number of legal impediments that I think we as a committee have to deal with, like, for instance, the Act 70 of 1970, the definition of communal land as agricultural land, the legislation we want to take away the royalties of mining royalties from communities. I just wanted to hear from the Honourable Judge whether, since he's identified these problems, whether you've got any suggested solutions, or how would you like to see it change, so that when we do look at these problems that you are facing, that we will have your input, or will you give us some of your input at the later stage? Because I think it's urgent matters. Then also, isn't it that the Constitution is the highest law in the land, and did the Constitution supersede these old acts? How does it work, Judge? Legal opinion, too.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I actually wanted to link to what Honourable Belil was saying. I was looking when we received this strategic plan by the department at this page 8 and page 9 that deals with all kinds of legislation and framework. And also coming to this meeting, I thought to myself, we are focusing on all kinds of things. We're talking about this rural strategy, and we're talking about a million things, but I know that in this act there must be things that we need to look at. And I'm glad that it was mentioned in this report here by the judge, because I think, you know, we need to be focusing on the things that's making it difficult for rural communities to survive. And my proposal would be that we have a workshop or oversight or whatever to go and visit the trust in Natal, so that we can actually sit down and understand what it is. And then just maybe another one on clarification, Chairperson. The judge said that that they only received 10 million rand from the department, but I looked. Yes, but when I look in this big, wonderful red book of ours, I see here on the KwaZulu-Natal Trust Board, it says 2.8 million rand for the new year, so 2.8. I don't know if I don't read it correctly or there's something somewhere that I'm missing. So I'm just checking figures, Chair. Maybe I'm missing something somewhere. I don't know if the department can answer that.
you are invited to join us for lunch after answering the three questions. Oh, there goes my lunch. Go to Manda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one small question. Konyama Trust talks about royalties that have been earned over the years and investment income that has been put out. I'm just interested in these royalties and the investments they have. What does that translate to as far as development is concerned on the areas they are in charge of, the traditional leaders, that 241 traditional leaders that are within that? What have they done as far as development with those funds?
No more hands now. Finish. I can't compromise my life.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the explanation, Chair, as best as I can try and explain of the 2.8 million versus 9.179 million. Until recently, Ngonyama Trust has been operating with a very lean staff. Hence, the amount that has been coming from the department has been what you have read, which is 2.8. But it has become evident that it has capacity problem in responding to the need. And a new organogram was devised, and with the concurrence of the DG, and out of that exercise, it meant that the budget will have to significantly be increased so that appropriate staffing can be appointed. So that is where it comes from. The discrepancy. This 9.179 is for the current year under the new organogram, which would start from next month forward. That's how I can explain it. With regards to, sorry, Chair. Yes, I think we would welcome the visit by members of this committee so that there is a better understanding of how we operate. The last question pertains to royalties and what we have done. Maybe to answer that question, the right thing to do is to illustrate how the Ngonyama Trust works. It does not parachute from top. Developments come from within the community upward. So like I was making an illustration with the 100 million rand hotel, for instance, that is already a development, for argument's sake, for the community. After 40 years, in fact, after 20 years, it shall be freehold after the bond has been discharged. So the community will be receiving the income, which is rental, directly from that hotel. What we then do from our side, we insist on a criteria that need to be followed for community projects. In some areas, you'll find that community gardens, vegetable gardens, sewing and arts and crafts centers and so on, which are built by the income that is generated. The present, thank you. The present policy of the board is that once the board has met all its financial responsibilities, the money is derived, be it from royalties or any activities. Excuse me. Okay, thank you. I'm calling now. Thank you, Chair. In other words, the board does not regard itself as owner of the income. It regards itself as the agent of the government and the community. So whatever monies that remains with the board is either sent back to the community once a business plan has been approved by the board,
or alternatively it remains in trust for future use by that community. In other words, the community still remains having a right to ask for that money for whatever projects that is not necessarily a government project but is community driven. Yes, with regards to the question by Ms. DeLille, I would prefer Chairperson to maybe send my suggestions in written form because I believe it would give members time to understand where we are coming from. And with regard to her second question, yes, the Constitution only kicks in once somebody activates it. But what I'm saying by that is, if in your title deed it says this house is reserved for a particular racial group, it's a condition of title. If you were to sell that house, technically you must sell it to a race that is described in the title deed until it is removed, consistent with the Constitution. So what you have in the deed office, you still have got, for instance, even farm names, with the names coming with K's, you know, K Drive, K Punches, and all those things. The deed office does not automatically say, no, the Constitution does not accept this anymore. The holder of a title deed must say, please remove this because it violates the Constitution. The first question was whether we believe that the Municipal Property Rights Act can apply differently. It cannot because it's a national legislation. I've had politicians saying it would not apply and so on, but the truth of the matter is municipalities must compile an evaluation roll for all properties within their jurisdiction. And those properties invariably include communal land. And therefore, those people who occupy that land must pay rates not to Ingonyama Trust, but to the municipality. We sitting in the middle, we know because, one, the land is not registered in the name of the community. It's registered in the name of Ingonyama Trust. So the municipality will send us the bill to say you owe so much. Because we know the land is occupied, because when it suits them, they close their eyes as if it's our land, we're using it. Meanwhile, they know it's occupied by people. So what we then do, we then say to them, just give us time so that we can negotiate with the political leadership. In fact, we started these negotiations 10 years ago. We alerted the political leadership that this would be a crisis. And then it kept on being postponed and postponed and postponed up to now. So it's not something that is new. We foresaw it coming day one, that it would be like that. But now what we're trying to say is that the reality has dawned. It has been implemented since July last year. So they're beginning now to send the rates. But it's convenient in case that then because they know it's in Ingonyama Trust that will talk. In some areas where they know they must send it to individual communities, they're keeping quiet but knowing that they're sitting with it. So if you go to the evaluation roll, you will see that, like, for instance, there are municipalities which don't own even a piece of land, where the whole land is a communal land. And therefore, the rate base of that municipality is that piece of land. The question is, can you tell the people, knowing what the reaction would be, or you wait for the crisis? Seems to me most of them are waiting for the crisis. But that's the reality of it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Judge. As we said last night, there is a possibility that most of the answers will come from the process of the Green Paper. Because if you are reviewing land tenure in South Africa, you must deal with this problem. But the property rates will not be solved by the Green Paper because I think it is a matter of national government having to take a decision. I know that DG told us, I don't know whether it's last week, that there is a tax exemption for a period of 10 years for those people working on these LRAT and others. So maybe the Honorable Judge and the Trust could work on what the contribution is going to be on the green paper relating to land tenure reform, but also on how and what advices, because I think Mr. Lin was alluding to that fact. What advice would the Ngonyama Trust give to the department in its negotiations with the sister departments so that communal land could be treated differently from the urban land? I don't know. It depends. But Tina Zifuna Ugulandela land Utuzwayenza Judge. Remember, our responsibility is to follow what you say you are going to do. We will help with the difficulties, but within the difficulties, some work you say you are going to do. We will pursue that. Yes, Ms. Day is correct. We are planning to visit Ingonya, Skesokasela, Gomku, but then enter into these discussions with these issues so that what the department is feeding over to you to act on their behalf should not escape under the carpet, because the department ignores the Ngonyama Trust as if it does not exist, and want the Ngonyama Trust to speak on its own. We will deal with that when we get there. Thank you, Honorable Judge. Honorable members, we have a long way to go on the work that needs to be done on both the strategic plans and the budget. We have a report to and a debate on the 24th of March in the House on both. So we are expected to be ready by that date. And Ms. Tin talks about a workshop. There is no expectation of a workshop before the 24th of March. We need to be ready. And therefore, we must be satisfied that the capacity of the department to perform its functions, we are happy with, to exercise this strategic plan. Because you can't give us a strategic plan and say, over the next 3 years, this is what we're going to do. On the one hand, you do not have the tools and the instruments to perform the function. So we still have to be satisfied in two that you are, in terms of your Honorable Judge, yeah, you'll give them 9.1 million for the new organogram. When we get to the House on the 24th, those members of that staff would not be in the organogram, because the money would not have flown into the trust. So the capacity of the trust as at that time would not be consummate with the work that they need to do. We need something that will then indicate to us that it will be by this particular time. Because like you and the DG were explaining to us, in order to recapitalize a piece of land, you need to do away with conflicts first. We know for a fact that there are pieces of land that have been under conflict for years. You do not possess a magic wand for this financial year because you are going to recapitalize. Suddenly, conflicts are gone. You have to convince us in some way that those conflicts will be dealt with. Alternatively, those farms will not fall within those farms that will be recapitalized. They will be postponed. But there's a danger, because you said yourself that the new acquisitions under LRAT will not be dealt with outside the new approach of CDRTP, which means they may jump the queue. If you acquire a piece of land under LRAT in September of this year, and the acquisition is conditional to the application of CRTP, it means it's its capitalization may make it jump the queue. Yes. They would, in fact, jump the queue. Because a farm somewhere that was acquired in 2007 or 1998, that is the conflict region, will not, we have learned as the Bible, So you can't say you knew, you just arrived, you are not going to be recapitalized, because the other one, those people have been waiting since 1998, because they are less organized, they are squatting on the land, all those other things must be dealt with first. And yet, here, this farm is ready to get off the ground. So this one will jump the queue. So those are the kinds of things that we will have to deal with you when we interact with you on your operational plan and your what is the other thing, Mr. Lee, you were talking about, and your business plan. But also yesterday we are agreeing that together with the appropriation committee and finance committee, we'll have to interact to make sure the money that flows into all these we know, so that we measure the amount of money. There was a gentleman here yesterday who spoke about value for money. So we need to know how much money is flowing into these programs in relation to the work that is being done. I know that, for instance, the department is getting how much money for administration? 577 million. So the salaries are kicking in all the time, irrespective of whether the work is happening on the ground or not. Value for money is also going to be measured on the basis of what are you doing for the money you are getting every month. So do your operational plans, your business plan in relation to the strategic plan will have to be aligned. And we will tell you which municipality will go to, because we want to know what Honorable Nchabeleng was asking, and which you said they are aligned. You said that. So you are aligning, not aligned already. Because we are going to visit KZN. If the four walls are still aligning when we get there, they may not know that they are. Honorable Judge, the subdivision of agricultural land is a pain in the neck for everybody. And government must do something about it. And the unfortunate part is that the department wants it, but they must work with agriculture. No, you want it now, because you can't categorize land and farms and farmers if you are not going to subdivide. They have said themselves they will categorize farmers and farms and land parcels. So you can't do that unless you subdivide.
Chairperson, I can just assist there quickly. Land acquired through the Provision of Assistance Land Act, which was amended by this Parliament in 2008, is not subject to Act 70 of 70. We can subdivide agricultural land provided we use that legislation. So the land reform projects that will be acquiring, whether it's PLAS, whether it's LRAD, is acquired in terms of that law, and it's not subject to Act 70 of 70.
Communal land is. And yet not all communal land is agricultural land. No. I'm talking about Nina, you are safe from the end, but they are not safe from the end. We heard that 2.3 million farmers are on communal land in South Africa. And they are subject to that. And there was a gentleman who posed the same question rhetorically, saying, is this therefore not punitive to poor people? But it's going to provide the solution. The missing link is the green paper. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Oh, for purposes of our debate on the 24th of March in the House, there is no way we will go to that House unless we've seen the operational plan. To be satisfied that you will be able to be in charge of what you're talking about in the operation, in the strategic plan, we can't go to the House and say we are comfortable that the department is on track, and yet we don't know in the operational plan whether you are indeed. You remember the honeymoon, too? Yeah, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we must go for lunch because the bells will ring at 10 to 2. Thank you very much.
No, 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 no,